The Summit County Council meeting tomorrow in the Sheldon Richens Building starting at 3:30. On the phone with me with a preview, I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie. And I just wanted to mention that Roger Armstrong and Doug Clyde are out at the Mirror Lake Diner this morning until 9 o'clock if anybody wants to come out and talk with them about anything related to the county.
Okay, where are they at?
They're at the Mirror Lake Diner in Camas.
Okay. So on the days that you do meet at the Sheldon Richens Building, do you drive all the way to Colville and back, or do you have a remote office there in the Richens Building?
I do not have a remote office. Usually, if I have time or meetings, depending on my schedule that day, I drive back and forth, or I just use a mobile device and work out of one of the conference rooms in the Richens Building if I don't have time to make that drive.
Right, right. Okay, well, let's see. Looking at the budget, a general discussion for next year's budget. The staff report also refers to an amended 2017 budget. At this point, where are you amending this year's spending?
Well, it's in several areas. And what happens throughout the year is sometimes, depending on like if a grant does not get budgeted properly, some type of expenditure comes up that we need to move around in a line item or between two departmental budgets. We keep track of those throughout the year and traditionally have done those at one time during the budget process in order to make it more efficient. If it's something really big, we make sure that it's agended properly during the year so that the council is considering it outside the normal budget process, and then we bring it back again in order to officially put it into the budget.
Okay. The council will also be considering a truth in taxation public hearing to be held every 5 years. How come?
The idea would be that every 5 years, the staff, the manager and the council would go through the process of truth to taxation to see if there was a need to adjust property tax rates. Doesn't mean that they would. It just simply means that regularly the public would see this process and we would be required to go out in that public way and be transparent about where our revenues sit in relation to our expenditures. I think it could be a better method than waiting 30 years before you discuss the topic.
So if this was approved, would it be binding on future councils?
Certainly it's something that a future council could change if they wanted to. It's more of a procedure and a statement of how we could operate in the future. And some direction to staff that we would go through this on a regular basis. And as well, it kind of memorializes it because there can be enough council and staff turnover in 5 years that no one would remember how we did this in the past.
The county council will also consider creating a position of solid waste manager. This is in addition to the solid waste superintendent. Why do you think we need an additional person?
Well, we've gone through the solid waste master planning process, and we're not finished with that plan yet, and we'll finish that up next year. Manager is probably the wrong term, as put in the staff report. We're looking at more of a foreman type position, and that's kind of an internal distinction. But the idea is we hired Tim Loveday as our superintendent over solid waste about a year ago. He has some tremendous background and talent that we're not able to utilize fully because he's spending a lot of time at the landfill doing quite a bit of the work around that. And we need to free up his time to actually implement some of the early action items like a commercial cardboard recycling program or seeing if we can develop a MRF to sort recycling. If we don't get into some of these areas, we're not going to advance that planning and bring our solid waste program to where the council would like to go.
All right. Also, talk a little bit about this Risk and Procurement Administration. Is this a new position as well?
It's not a new position. It's the position that Matt Jensen left when he went to be a city manager in New York State. We've held that position open. The Budget Committee recommended not funding that position, but I think we need to look at our risk and procurement programs as well as some other areas of the county and some needs around staffing. And this is to give the council the flexibility to look at those needs. We wouldn't fill that position right away, but funding it would give us the flexibility to make some changes where we might need to.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the funding for mental health. There's mention of $100,000 for 2 years funding to, let me see. Let's just talk about funding. There's other, what are we talking about there? We haven't really heard numbers yet.
Well, we heard numbers a couple of weeks ago when the council adopted the mental health strategic plan. There was an approximate $240,000 request for the 18 budget, which would cover county contributions to several initiatives within that strategic plan. One of them being another mental health provider that would be located at our new campus, South Summit Services building. They also brought in a reduced request that would kind of be what they would consider the bare bones need to go into 2018, which was around $140,000, I believe. So the council, I mean, we didn't put a specific number in the staff report, but the council will be considering those two things against all the other expenditures that are outside of my recommendation from October as they deliberate on Wednesday.
All right. Also mention of $100,000 for 2 years funding to, we knew it as the Mountain Accord. It's now the Wasatch Commission.
The Central Wasatch Commission, yes. So we haven't been billed for our 2017 contribution to the Central Wasatch Commission. We still have two $50,000 payments that we need to make. We're not anticipating that we'll get a bill from the Central Wasatch Commission before the end of this year. So we're anticipating that they will want 2 years of their allocation next year. So that's why we brought that expenditure forward in 2018.
All right. And then also $100,000 for an environmental impact study of what?
Well, several things. We are getting very close, I think, finalizing some open space purchases.
Hey, Tom.
Environmental studies.
You're cutting out.
Sorry?
I said you're cutting out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is it still cutting out?
That's better.
Okay. We're the council is getting close to finishing some open space purchases or offers on some open space that are going to require some level of environmental analysis, and we wanted to budget appropriately for it. We're not exactly sure what that's going to cost at this point.
All right. And I think we've heard from you before that a cost of living increase of 2% was included in the budget. Are we also talking about merit funding now for employees?
Yeah, the council was interested in seeing what it would cost to put some level of merit increase in that. We have projected about $160,000 line item in the budget if they want to do what we call a 2% average merit increase for employees in 2018. So that's the discussion the council will have on Wednesday.
Okay. So are all of these funding mechanisms here, I mean, are they all to be decided by next week's public hearing, December 6th? All right, we've lost you again. Tom, we're losing you again.
I'm stuck at a light right now. So if you can't hear me,
you're coming in and out. Tom?
I can hear you.
Okay, well, we're losing you. Okay, so are all these decisions going to be made before next week's first public hearing?
Yes. We have to put the final budget together before the public hearing, or at least the draft that the council will consider, and then they will take that into those two public hearings on the 6th and the 13th.
Okay. Discussion on a special exception being requested by the Mountain Life Church in the Silver Creek neighborhood. The church was approved back in 2000. Now it wants to increase its building space by more than 12,000 square feet and increase parking spaces up to like 556 spaces, nearly tripling the current number. The expansion intrudes into an area that was designated as open space. Now they want to see if the county will forgive that requirement.
Yeah, this is a tough one. The only method that the applicant has, according to the community development director, in order to get into the process of applying for a conditional use permit to do what they want to do, is to first get relief from a provision within their development agreement for open space. And so that's what the council will be looking at. And then the staff report indicates that even if they got that relief, there's still provisions within the code that would be difficult to meet in order to receive that conditional use permit. And that largely has to do with parking requirements and setbacks from wetlands. The property that they're talking about is a pretty wet piece of property. So it will be interesting to see how the council comes down on this.
Right. It was just last week that Councilmember Armstrong said he didn't like special exceptions. So now we've got another one.
Well, I was just with him this morning, and he said for me to clarify, it's not that he doesn't like special exceptions necessarily. He just likes them for the council to be very judicious in how they're used, because he's afraid that they'll set precedences that are tough to meet. There's sometimes issues with development agreements that expire, that the only method for a property owner to approach the county on some kind of change is a special exception, and that's what we're running into here. As a result, the council is looking at having a discussion about special exceptions and that provision within the code. In January, we'll tee that up at that point so that they can help staff and the Planning Commission clarify what exactly we want to use these special exceptions for and why.
So aren't churches like schools? Basically, they can do what they want, or sounds like no.
They're not the same as schools. The schools have a special provision within state law that have different exemptions. Churches are not treated exactly the same way. They're treated similarly from a tax code perspective, but not from a planning code.
All right. One more meeting on the Canyon Spa Amendment. This will be a public hearing. Is staff at this point recommending approval of that?
Well, there's still quite a few documents and things that need to be put together to finish this. We've been meeting regularly with folks at the Canyons to get all that completed. I think we're pretty close, and I believe that the staff report is going to recommend that this move forward.
Okay. Anything further on the Jeremy Noisewall study?
I have not heard anything further since the beginning of this week or since Thanksgiving.
All right. And any update on the Oscarthorpe property?
Just that we're continuing to talk with Summit Lands about that, and making sure that we understand each other as to see if there's a way to get to some kind of conclusion that's good for everybody.
And a couple of weeks ago, the county council met with our legislative representatives in the Utah legislature. How did that go?
That went really well. You know, the main objective of that was just to have familiarity between the parties as we go into the legislative session, and for the legislators to hear a few of the things that we're watching as we go into the legislative session. We don't have any strong initiatives that we're looking at pushing this year, but I'm sure there'll be some items that we'll be playing some defense on, and we'll have to be working closely with our legislators to do that.
Okay. Just a reminder, we've got council members Roger Armstrong and Doug Clyde until 9 a.m. hanging out at the Mirror Lake Diner, and what, just basically to answer questions or chit-chat or...
Answer questions or talk about any subject that anybody wants to talk to them about.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention? 8:31 now. Good morning. Well, the Park City Planning Commission meets tomorrow, one of the last regularly scheduled meetings to discuss Treasure Hill before the Planning Commission takes a vote December 13th. In the studio with details, I have Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So we're still in the process, but you have some new information from them as of last Friday?
The applicant made some additional submittals last Friday, and they're going to make some additional presentations coming up tomorrow night. And I think that's part of the ongoing process going forward. As we receive this information, it's very difficult for us to process the information in terms of what the Planning Commission is supposed to be doing. Planning Commission is reviewing a conditional use permit. And what that permit says in the Land Management Code and in the state law is that you have to be able to mitigate the impacts. Mitigate doesn't make them go away, but you have to be able to mitigate them. So what the staff is very, very focused on is being able to measure the effectiveness of a mitigation and being able to quantify what the mitigation is standard is going forward, so we have some way of controlling it going forward. And so when we get generalizations about we're going to have a couple of water trucks, there's no measurement tool there. And so the staff has to respond and say, what's the measurement tool? What are we mitigating? How is that effective? And how do we make that determination so the Planning Commission can vote one way or another as to the mitigation strategy? So that, in a nutshell, is where we are in our discussions with the applicant at this point.
All right. So you get more information and then just don't have a chance, not enough information, and then really don't have a chance to analyze
there,
it.
Yeah, there needs to be an ability to measure the mitigation strategy, and there needs to be a measure to be able to control that mitigation strategy. Whether the applicant decides to construct this project or there's a future builder of the project or owner of the project, we need to have the ability as the city to measure what was agreed to.
Staff cites in this week's report that there are three areas where the applicant's current proposal doesn't meet the original master plan: the size of the proposal, the limit of disturbance, the development boundaries, and the mass excavation and scale. So given that those are the three big ones, I'm guessing, does that foreshadow a denial?
I don't know what it's going to foreshadow. It's going to be up to the Planning Commission. I believe the staff has done a good job of the analysis, because in the broader scheme of things, the City Council decided that, yes, you can have a certain number of unit equivalents on this site. And, yes, the impacts are going to be A, B, and C. We will give you a master development plan development agreement. Now the idea is to be able to mitigate it, and the first part of that is determining whether the current proposal is consistent with the previous proposal. And so as I go back, and Planner Astorga goes back all the way to 2006, Community Development Director, Planning Director Pat Putt was saying, this is too big, it's not consistent. In 2009, the planner responsible for the project was saying the same thing. So we're consistently making roughly the same finding about the size of the project. The applicant, on the other hand, is saying, well, you know, our plans were conceptual at the time. They weren't detailed enough. You can't hold us to what the City Council approved so dramatically. We expect some latitude in that. And that's what the Planning Commission is going to have to sort out tomorrow night.
So we have added one meeting, and that's going to be for December 6th?
That's correct. There's a special meeting on December 6th. It will be a work session, so the Planning Commission will be able to have a discussion amongst themselves on how they want to go forward. At the end of that work session, they'll take public comment as part of the regular session.
All right. And then will a final report be issued from Jody Burnett, who's been following this all along?
No, the report will come from my department. Obviously, The legal team will review our report as they always do. But no, that's coming from us.
Are you working on that report now?
Yes, we are.
All right. So you'll have that out by when?
A good question, Leslie. The report for next Wednesday, the 6th, is due out on Friday. And then the subsequent Friday after that for the 13th meeting, that report will be out. So we normally deliver our staff reports the Friday before the Planning Commission meeting.
And do you anticipate making a recommendation on that?
That's a tough call. I where we're going to be is I believe we're preparing the findings of fact and conclusions of law now. The conditions that we would set either for approval or denial probably won't be known until we come out of the meeting tomorrow night.
Okay. And then just that timeline. So a decision is made on the 13th and...
Well, that's up to the Planning Commission. The applicant has asked for a decision on the 13th. They have not invoked their rights to call for the 45-day review period, but they've asked for the 13th. They've indicated that they will be done giving us new information tomorrow on the 29th. So that gives us a couple of weeks to pull this whole thing together, assuming the Planning Commission gives us direction. Whether or not it's a full and complete, I mean, we're talking in the course of a 50-page document closing out 40 years of review. So, and that 40 years is an exaggeration, excuse me, but 30 years of review in a 30 to 40-page document. And so that's going to be a bit of a test.
So is there also a Planning Commission meeting scheduled for December 27?
At this point, no, but it could be.
Okay. But the goal is by everyone is to at least have a decision by the end of 2017.
The applicant would like that. Our goal is to make sure we've got a consistent and fair decision that is consistent with our land management code.
All right. The National Ability Center, it's under the continuation for the Master Plan Development Amendment. What's this amendment looking for?
Well, the National Ability Center plays an important role in our community, and what they've asked for is an ability to expand a number of their services. They've moved into the Wounded Warrior Project. They've got a couple other programs out there for kids. It was kind of a complicated approval back in the day. We transferred the approval from a county specially planned area approval to the city process. That needs to get cleaned up. So what we're saying is that they will need to amend their master plan approval in order to add additional athlete housing on the site, because that addition basically changes the conditions of approval that we brought the project in when we annexed it. The other stuff on the agenda that they're asking for, like remodeling the arena and storage for their bicycles and a place for the lawnmowers and some of that other stuff, that's consistent with the current uses, and that's primarily driven to take care of the current users, just changing the program around, even as far as going to the potential camping locations for the folks that are participating in the program to go try out sleeping all night, right? So... we think those are consistent with their approval.
Yeah. So was there some kind of density allowance, though? I mean,
it's a very, very strange process because of the way we brought it in from the county and the way the deed restrictions agree on the ground. So there is a water agreement that establishes a certain number of square feet that project can have. They are responsible for transferring some water rights to the city, which they have done. The wet water portion of that has not transferred over yet, and it's all kind of complicated. So we think that these current uses, we're recommending to the Planning Commission they should approve, but not move forward on the housing until we can clean up the paperwork.
Yeah, how many housing units are we talking about?
You know, I'd have to go look back in the book. I think they have 20 or 30 out there now. They probably look for another 20 or so.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, I mean, we're talking about a new recreation and gymnasium building, a new program building, an equestrian center expansion. I mean, we're talking about it getting pretty large, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, we're probably looking at another 15,000 to 20,000 square feet out there, but a lot of it is just... You know, we're coming out of the 1990s, 2000s, 2005 programming for these type of folks that need these services. And 2017 is a different environment, and we really need to help the people that need these services to be able to achieve the goals that National Ability Center has set.
Okay. And then also on the regular agenda, we've got King's Crown development, 27 single-family homes, 25 residential units, 7 townhomes, 18 affordable units. And what they need here is a conditional use permit for all of it?
They need two things. Well, they actually need three things because of the way this is going. They need to do a subdivision, which is to create the new parcels and make the old lots of record from the early 1900s go away. They need a conditional use permit for the multifamily housing, and they need a master plan development for the rest of their project.
Okay. So we're dropping density quite a bit. This was originally, what, over 300 units?
Yeah, it's about 290-odd lots that were drawn by the surveyors in Chicago in the 1900s. Back in the 70s, the city vacated all those streets, so none of those lots have any development rights, particularly to them, and then they were rezoned. So, in effect, there were 290-odd lots up there. We're making all those go away now and condensing it down into the density that's being proposed.
Is this ski in, ski out property?
Yes, very much like everything else on Norfolk or Lowell Avenue, you're going to be able to ski down the hill. The ability to cross outside of the ski runs is up to the ski area, but there is a ski trail proposed with this project.
All right. So any issues for your staff?
The usual Lowell Avenue discussions, driveways on Lowell Avenue. The site is fairly steep, so the units are going to be tucked into the hill fairly tightly. It's a 14% grade private driveway for those units, so we're trying to make sure that all the driveways work, that we have to heat some of the driveways to make sure we have snow removal. The usual suspects, Leslie.
Okay. But it sounds like it's going forward?
We think we have most of the issues in a position where the Planning Commission can give us direction, yes.
Okay. And again, this is a public hearing and possible action on that. That would then go forward to council, or is that just a...
The subdivision would go forward to council. The other two actions are Planning Commission.
Okay. Anything else going on?
No, it's pretty quiet. No, actually, we have a lot going on. Sundance is ramping back up. They have a number of proposals into the Planning Department now for signs and how they want to handle some of the building and their messaging. We're moving forward on a couple of the open space annexations in Round Valley and some smaller things in Old Town that we're trying to move forward as well.
Yeah. So on the Sundance, last year they had gotten a permit to close Lower Main Street. Is that happening again?
I'd have to defer that to special events. I don't know the answer to that one at this point. They won't tell me till the end, Leslie.
Okay. Hey, Bruce, thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson. KPCW News Time now, 844. It's the local news hour on KPCW.
I'm Nicole Chastain with All Seasons Resort Lodging, proud to support KPCW. When you own a second property, it can be difficult to manage, but it's our passion. We maintain units with nightly rental management and HOA services to care for your property. More information at allseasonsresortlodging.com.
Hi, I'm Amy Roberts with Park City Hospital, a not-for-profit community hospital supporting KPCW. While you may never need to outrun a cheetah, the sports performance team at Park City Hospital can help you do so using our new high-speed treadmill. Whether you're an elite athlete or just looking to better your PR, our team of experts will help you run faster, get stronger, and increase your agility. The high-speed treadmill is designed to go up to 31 miles an hour, allowing you to outrun and outlast the competition. And cheetahs. Call 435-658-7350 to book a session.
The Park City School District looking at a budget increase of about $7 million for next school year. In the past, budget talks happen in the winter and early spring of the calendar year, but the school district taking a different approach. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more.
Business Administrator Todd Hauber is working on the 2019 school year budgets now, about 2 to 3 months earlier than in the past. He says they knew with the teacher salary increases in June that they would need an extra $3.5 million for next year. After meeting with administrators in all the schools, they're now discussing another $3.5 million in new hiring and program needs.
We saw that in advance and had already been preparing for that. We're in the current conversations with our building administrators and with our department heads about what additional needs we may have for the upcoming school year as well. And I presented a round number, about $3.4 million. Of additional services and staffing that we would need for the upcoming year. That's all under discussions right now we'll see where that number actually lands in the next couple of weeks.
A home valued at $650,000 would see about a $200 increase in property taxes. School administrators historically haven't been able to start hiring new staff until much later in the school year. They say they can't be competitive if they wait so long to initiate hiring.
The board has asked us to advance our budget cycle, so we're making holding meetings and making decisions that we'd normally be holding in February and in March. We're advancing that into December and January so that we can get ahead of the hiring cycles that happen in the state for teachers and administrators. We just want to make sure we have a good locked-in budget so that we can hire the best staff.
The Legislative Committee for Revenue and Taxation met over the summer to address tax issues. Haber has been participating in the discussions.
Trying to determine how to improve the calculations for new growth, how to advance the cycle for when dollars are made available to the schools in the budgeting process. And Senator Stevenson is putting together a major tax reform bill that he's calling an omnibus bill that includes property tax increases as well. So we're here watching that.
Haber says there will be another school equalization bill in the 2018 legislative session, but so far he has not seen the language on the bill. I'm Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
Earl Foote here, CEO and Chief Technology Consultant with Nexus IT, still supporting the station and staff of KPCW. Technology can be slow, old, or frustrating. Nexus IT provides service, sales, and maintenance for your personal and business computer needs. 435-487-9099 or nexusitc.net.
It's 847. Good morning. Well, coming up on Saturday, a special Christmas concert in the studio with details. I have Keith Lilly. Good morning to you, Keith.
Good morning, Leslie.
So this is when and where?
This will be on December 2nd, this Saturday at 3 p.m. at Shepherd of the Mountains Lutheran Church down on Highway 224 by the entrance to the canyons.
Okay. And it's free?
It is free. Free will donations will also be accepted to help offset some costs.
Great. So who have you got coming?
Well, the first group we have coming is a group called Jubilate. They're an extraordinary choral ensemble. They've performed down in Salt Lake City many times. And I thought, why just practice for one concert when they could make two concerts and make Park City, the community here, very happy?
Okay.
And the second group is the Midway Swiss Handbell Ringers with a number of Christmas arrangements on their handbells. And last but not least, we will have Rob Stefanison at the Hauptwerk Virtual Pipe Organ. As I'd shared with you last year, this organ can play hundreds of organs from throughout the world.
Okay. And again, is the church sponsoring all of this then?
This is being hosted by Shepherd of the Mountains. Our concept is we're in the mountains for good and for the community.
All right. And tell me, in terms of how long this is going to last, each one performing for what, 20
right.
minutes?
We've decided to break it up and have tried to narrow them down to about 10 minutes each in the first section, and then we'll repeat that 10 minutes in the next section. So it will be approximately an hour to an hour and 15 minutes.
Okay. Everybody welcome?
Everyone, the entire community is welcome to come up to hear the groups, and we also have some of the groups combining together. For example, we will have Jubilate, the virtual pipe organ, and the handbell ringers on a couple numbers as well.
Great.
And the audience will have sing alongside on several of the numbers.
Okay. Again, that's this Saturday, December 2nd at 3.
That is correct.
And you wanted to play just a little bit of maybe the music?
I'd be more than happy to.
Okay. Keith Lilly.
This is Rob Stefanison at the Virtual Hauptwerk Pipe Organ.
Okay, that's the Christmas concert this Saturday, December 2nd, 3 o'clock at Shepherd of the Mountains Lutheran Church. Keith, thanks for your time.
My pleasure, Leslie. Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:51. 8:51 now, good morning. Well, it's that time of year for Operation Hope, a program put on by the Christian Center of Park City every year to ensure that every kid in Park City gets a Christmas gift. In the studio with details, I have Executive Director of the Christian Center, Rob Harder. Good morning, Rob.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so tell us how it works. You basically are collecting toys, clothing, books, and set up a Christmas store?
Exactly. Yes, it started as Sub for Santa, where we just we've done this for many years now, and we transitioned to a toy store the last couple of years. We found it's think it's so much better because the parents can come and actually select the gifts for their children. So they have this kind of empowering example of, hey, I want to get what I know is best for my kids. And so what we're asking people is to get all the gifts, like you said, toys, games, books, clothes, etc. Bring them to the Christian Center, or there's bins kind of throughout town. You can drop them off. We do ask they're unwrapped, and we ask that they're new. And then we'll collect them all. And then if you want to volunteer for the day of the event, you can come and then we set up the store. And so it's really fun. So the parents come through and it's all decked out in Christmas, you know, decorations. And there's different sections for toys and different sections based on age. And so it's actually a toy store experience for these parents.
Yeah. So you need the stuff by December 8th. That's coming up.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Next Friday is really we start our deadline. That gives us time to make sure that we have everything locked in and organized.
Okay, and then the toy store is at the Christian Center?
No, because we're under construction, as many people know, we are actually going to be at St. Mary's again, which is so nice of St. Mary's. We want to give them a shout out. So we did that last year, and we'll do it again this year at St. Mary's.
Okay, and that happens when the parents actually come by?
Yes, so the 19th and 20th of December are going to be the 2 days. And so, yeah, we're looking for volunteers who want to come, and you can greet people, you can organize the gifts, you can help decorate, whatever you'd like to do. We'd love to have some more volunteers do that.
Yeah, how many gifts do you actually need? You have any idea?
You know what? Probably it's going to be over 1,500 kids, and there's approximately about 7 to 8 gifts per child that they get. So if you do the quick math, it's several thousand gifts. There's a lot, which is wonderful, though.
And then what do you need? I mean, do you have any idea what age groups being missed?
You know, we did this winter clothing drive and particularly a coat drive specifically earlier with several other organizations, YSA being one of them. So we don't probably need at this point winter jackets. We've got a lot of those and most of these kids already received that. But any kind of boots and toys and pajamas, other regular clothes is always something that kids like. And of course, toys. Whatever age you like, we're 0 through 16. Every child likes a toy on Christmas. And so you can't go wrong with toys.
Okay. Do you have a list online then that people can
we just have suggestions? Yes, we really leave it up to our community and whatever they like to buy. You know, we encourage people, maybe take, if they have kids, take their kids shopping, and what would they like, let them buy the gifts for these other kids.
Great. And how do you decide what parents get to come pick the stuff?
Yeah,
the toys out?
In terms of what kind of what they can select.
Well, yeah, I mean, how is it decided who gets these gifts?
Yeah, so what we do is we just have a sign up. We've done it for every several years now, and it really is based on just need. And so people sign up, and we have sign up typically in October. And most of them are people that come to our food pantry. They may be involved with one of their other programs that we know that this is a family in need. But we don't really ask that many questions. We just feel like if they feel like they need help this Christmas, we're going to sign them up. And then it's first come, first serve at that point, though. And then we do have a waiting list after the sign up period. And so if it all goes well and we get more toys, we actually have this waiting list and we communicate to those families, hey, on the end of Wednesday, if there's more toys, we actually bring that waiting list in and they can come and shop as well.
All right. So it's just kind of a lottery who gets to go in first?
Exactly. That's correct. First come, first serve.
Yeah. Yeah. And then what? The parents bring it home and they wrap them.
You know, yes, they do. Or, you know, we actually, because volunteers love to do that kind of thing, we actually have a wrapping station. So they can leave with wrapped gifts, and that way they can go home and the kids don't maybe accidentally see what these gifts are and they're already wrapped and they can put them under the tree. It's kind of a fun thing.
Yeah, pretty nice.
I know. Maybe you could stop by and get your own gifts wrapped.
Yeah. Again, so you need the gifts by December 8th. And again, at the Christian Center is the best place to drop them off?
That's the best place. I mean, there are some bins around town. You may see them in local businesses, but that's probably the best place is come to our location.
Okay. And if somebody wanted to volunteer, that sign up is
Yeah, you'd
online.
Go to ccofpc.org, and there's a big little thing on our website. It says Operation Hope. Just click on that. It says volunteer. You can hit that button. It's a really simple process, and let us know how much time you can give.
Okay. What else you got going on? You said you're still under construction?
We are under construction, yes. So we're in the new building, so you can stop by. We'd love to give you a tour. So that's a nice thing. So we're in the new building, but then the old building is being remodeled. So you'll see that being remodeled all through the winter, and the goal is to be done by June 1st of next spring or next summer.
Okay. So what do you have in the new building now? Because you still have the boutique offsite.
That's correct. That's going to stay right there by Windy Ridge Cafe and Ritual Chocolate. So what we have right now is the food pantry and the thrift store at the lower level. So that's still functioning. You can also drop off any kind of donations, you know, whether clothes or household goods, et cetera. And the good news is, Leslie, we do have that kind of turnabout now. So it's much easier process. We've actually heard from our donors. They really enjoy it. It's so much easier than kind of trying to park in there, back up, and there's not much room. So you can drop that off. So that's fully functional, our normal hours. And then on the mid-level is our staff area. And then our top levels are enhanced counseling center. We actually now have really a lot of room to grow. In fact, we're working with Connect, a local, many people know about Connect, and we're wanting to open that up and actually have some other people that use our space for their nonprofit work.
Okay.
Because we have that much space.
Oh, wow. All right. But the drop-off happening kind of behind the building.
Exactly. That's right. Kind of in the old area, but we have this nice roundabout in the back now, which makes it so much easier.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
No, we just want to thank Vacasa, My Way Storage, and downstairs have been great supporters for Operation Hope. And this is going to be a fun time of the year. And we just encourage you to support every child this year. We want every child to have a wonderful Christmas this year.
Okay. Rob, thanks.
Thanks so much, Leslie.
It's Rob Harder, Executive Director of the Christian Center of Park City.